Hello and welcome to Rule of Carnage.
My goodness.
A podcast sometimes, a video series often, where myself, Glenn Ford, a games designer and developer, talks Bruce. To another guy who is called Mike Hutchinson, who is a games designer and developer. And we talk on this channel about designing better miniatures games.
I really like miniature games.
I do love a miniatures game. One of the sorts, one of the categories, one of the types of miniatures game that we've talked about in the past is, you know, what is referred to slightly nebulously as miniatures agnostic games. And we've talked about maybe what miniatures agnostic means, and I'll put a little link in the description to the video where we do that. But we've also been thinking like more crunchily about what designing a miniatures agnostic game like really means, the things you have to do to be miniatures agnostic, and particularly some of the possibly hidden pitfalls to doing. Because
you can make games more or less miniature agnostic. And so given that this podcast has the subtitle, this is maybe a conversation about designing better miniature agnostic games.
Yeah, and like how far down the wedge of miniatures agnosticism you end up going, and how far you go down it with your design. And I'll step in by saying, like, my feeling about miniatures agnosticism is that I don't care what miniature you use, but I want to care about what miniature you happen to be using. I want to say, use whatever miniature you like, pick one, right? Now let's have a little look at it and talk about like what matters about it, what sorts of things we need to define on it, why we need to define them.
Yeah, and I think as we talked about in the previous conversation, let's apportion out and remove from this conversation the does it even matter if you're playing with miniatures sort of potential meaning of miniature agnosticism. So we'll assume that miniatures matter. And given that you're going to use miniatures, you must use miniatures. What are the ways that you need to make sure that your game is engaging with that fact in the best and most sort of, I don't know, the most effective but also permissive way?
Yeah, so let's open up with one of a thing that popped into my head is what you see is what you get.
Yep.
Now, obviously, what you see is what you get is a lovely and convenient thing on the tabletop, because it saves a lot of like note keeping and explanations backwards and forwards. Is what you see is what you get a miniatures agnostic rule? Insofar as I'm not saying you have to use this miniature, but I am saying represent a rifle on your miniature however you like. Represent a guy carrying a rifle, go forth and discover miniatures carrying rifles. I don't mind, so long as somebody can look at that and go, well, that's a rifleman. I'm set and I'm happy.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's interesting you started with this one, because I think is almost the most arguable about whether or not this is ever a rule you can put in a game full stop, because it's kind of a social contract thing more than it is a demand of the game.
It's interesting because it, you're right, it is a very social thing, it is a very sort of house rule thing, but it is a thing that a lot of people consider to be a significant part of like minis gaming, an important thing that, you know,
sorry, that they do or they do not.
That they do. I've spoken to a lot of people who consider what you see is what you get to almost be a defining feature of miniatures games. That they're like,
I see that. Yeah, so that's interesting. So in Mike Land, like Hobgoblin says there is a unit type called chariot, or in Gaslands that there is a chassis type called a truck, and then goes out of its way to make it clear that it doesn't really literally mean that, and it could be a flying angel like god warrior, or a, you know, very large car with a big butt, and you can use those that stat line because this is a functional block of, it's a stat block that you can use when you need a stat block this shaped. And if you need a stat block this shaped for the miniature that you've chosen, this is how much it's going to cost and how it's going to work in the game.
Absolutely. And what's interesting, I think, there is like Hobgoblin is a like quite definitely sort of going for whatever miniatures agnostic is quite heavily. At the same time, you know, there is that little paragraph where we have to step in and go, look, you know, use whatever miniature you like, but don't intentionally deceive with it. It doesn't need to be what you
say. Right, but like, imagine trying to put this rule in a billion suns. Like, who knows what a spaceship even looks like? There is no, like, you can make some arguments for about fantasy armies that there's enough tropes from Tolkien forwards and enough cinema that you can kind of make a. But like, no, like, if this says like frigates have to have twin banks of triple laser, of like turbo lasers, like, you probably can't even see them anyway. Like, what does that even mean? So yeah, I think that it's really important. I personally feel, but I don't think that this is a rule as in some of the other rules that we might cover in this conversation. I personally strongly feel that you should not enforce what you see is what you get, or even suggest through your rules writing that it ought to be enforced socially. I think that that's a mistake.
I think sort of fully requiring it to be enforced might be a mistake. Mentioning where it might create arguments. Because, okay, all right, a billion suns is a good example, because I don't know what a recon ship looks like as opposed to a corvette, but I do know a corvette is bigger than a recon ship.
And I know
that if you put down a recon ship as a battleship, and I discover that it is a battleship when I thought it was a recon ship, I will become unhappy with you.
That's true.
And sort of having little moments of going, look, this is totally open, this is totally even, but this is a moment where if somebody like steps outside of
it. Right, so that's less about WYSIWYG and more about providing some mechanism, whether it's an explicit piece of guidance note or a stat that's easily interpretable, which basically says, how should we interpret the unit? What's the suggested sort of categorization of it? I had a much more useful phrase, but I lost it in that sentence. But yes, you need to provide some indication of what the kind of unit classification is, so that it's not super confusing.
Yeah, sort of.
I think that probably changes a lot by genre and by kind of model type.
Absolutely. And understanding, I think possibly understanding what the useful social contracts that every table will need playing your game are.
Yeah.
At the moment to say, look, okay, here's the bare minimum. You know, this is genuinely sort of unsporting if you don't go to like at least this degree. And then everything over or above that is you have a nice conversation about it. So I know you've got like a few like specific rules of miniature Gnosticism you've been thinking about. Do you want to sort of mention one of the ones that are on your list?
Yeah, so I'll start with the not very contentious one, which is base sizes should either not matter at all, and we'll figure out how that can be true, or should be very strict and specific. And I don't think, I think if you end up in the middle, which many miniature agnostic games do, you end up in problems. And you probably don't spot those problems because you're being a good person when you're playtesting, or you're the kind of person who doesn't care and that's why you didn't write these rules. But you really have to write the rules such that it mechanically doesn't matter what the base is. And the easiest way to do that is measuring from the center of the model, like I do in A Billion Suns, where it literally doesn't matter what object you use to stabilize the model. We always measure from a known point, and there is no possible advantage or disadvantage in the stabilization choice that you make.
Absolutely.
Or Hobgoblin does this, but a really good example of this is Gamma Wolves, which basically says you've got three sizes of mech. They're 40 mil, 60 mil and 80 mil circular bases. I don't care what you fill that base with, but it must be filled with robot. And that robot should look like one of these things. But the mechanics are that it's always going to be one of these three sizes of bases. Adeptus Titanicus basically does the same thing as well. And that's good as well, because then you have a clear and shared understanding of what a legal base size is. And then you're sort of providing a level of miniature agnosticness to fill that base up. Now, interestingly, in all the games that I'm writing, I have deliberately eschewed that. And the reason is that I'm always assuming pretty much that you are scavenging models from other games in order to play my game, because I don't provide a line of miniatures. And to a degree, I maybe would have advised Ash to do the same thing, because if Ash is saying, use your Gunpla models or your Adeptus Titanicus models or your tags from Infinity, like Infinity is very finicky about base sizes. I'm not going to rebase my Infinity tag. I'm going to use my Infinity tag on its existing base. Similarly, like if I'm asking you to use Star Wars Armada miniatures, or if I'm inviting you to use Star Wars Armada miniatures in A Billion Suns, I need to be very careful because those bases really matter, and you're not going to rebase your miniatures if you still want to play that game. But you might also be using miniatures from, you know, Full Thrust or something that have little, you know, old school plastic flight bases and stuff. So I think for me, going in the direction of fixed base sizes that are determined is good and clean from a rules perspective, but from a hobby perspective, from an accessibility perspective, from like a will I destroy my ability to play game one in order to play your game? I feel a bit strongly that the best thing to do is to say, hey, welcome to my town. It provides no destructive requirements.
Yeah. And the thing is that this is equally, I think, one of the early sort of things to keep your eye on, that it's really hard to write a rule set where having a bigger or smaller base doesn't give you any kind of gameplay advantage whatsoever. And I think it's like talking about things like, you know, X-Wing, A Billion Suns, Full Thrust is, you know, that having that spindly like flight stand thing as the thing that the miniature is like the most miniatures agnostic, I think, the one truly miniatures agnostic thing out there, because it's sort of saying, whatever you can balance on this little spindly stick, you know, go wild, and it's the spindly stick that matters. Because as soon as you say, get a miniature, and it has to fit onto a certain footprint, you're going, all right, so I can't have any miniature, right? I can't have a miniature.
Yeah, and it's weird, because I don't think if you asked anyone, is Battlefleet Gothic a miniature agnostic game, anyone would say yes. But it bloody well is, and it literally says it in the opening paragraphs. Andy Chambers says, every one of these spaceships is absolutely tiny. The miniatures are ludicrous. But what you have to imagine is that they're kind of like, they're like heads up display, zoomed in sort of cartoon representations of the ship is, it looks cool and you want a cool painting thing, but the actual scale of the miniature, otherwise these planets are like, you know, just ludicrous.
Yeah.
And so that like, that abstraction where no one's worried that the models in Battlefleet Gothic are nonsensical, like it's quite easy to manage that conflict in your head for a certain kind of game. I think it would be super weird if you tried to do that with a humanoid figure and you were like, okay, well, we're playing across the entire landmass of Asia. This 28 mil barbarian is actually just the representation of an entire barbarian army. Like, it doesn't work. I mean, you could use 6 mil. You could use one banner of 6 mil people, and maybe it would work. But it's funny because we're just programmed. We have been socially programmed to read miniatures in one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if you present a different thing, like obviously, all right, in Risk, you absolutely do have like a miniature on a map of Europe, and it represents the entire army, and that's fine. But that's because board games have sort of gone, hi, we're in the realm of board games now. This is a different,
all is that, yeah, abstraction is up here,
yeah, and sort of where you abstract, and like, yeah, like I say, totally, I think that base size agnosticism is a tricky thing, and I think it's interesting, like tracking back to Hobgoblin, because you know the ethos of Hobgoblin in many ways was, hey, if you've got a unit already, this is what it might fit into, and here are some ranges that existing units probably fit into one way or the other. And for me, it's super interesting to see people on the Discord at the moment talking about, okay, I use this size of tray that is allowed to me by the rules, because that way I can zone out other sorts of units. I can like set my battle line up in such a way that someone cannot fit through, and then you can't like get over me with flying, and you can't use sneaky here, and I can use these measurements to gain gameplay advantage.
Right. And one thing that both Gaslands and Hobgoblin have is the design of the movement system is such that so the pivoting, not pivoting, what's it called? I'm editing the rules right now. I can't remember the wheeling. So wheeling is an example where, okay, a larger unit can zone out, can block more of the table, and maybe can engage more units or suffer more charges, but also it takes longer to swing round. So there's a positive and a disadvantage, and you kind of get an opportunity to make that decision. And exactly the same thing is true and often debated in Gaslands, where it's like a limousine versus a compact car. One of them will weirdly move faster because of the way that Gasland movement templates are. You move it and to start to end, but they'll also turn slower because of the same physical reality. And so I guess there are ways of designing Gaslands and Hobgoblin which removes that disadvantage, which would then make it a unquestionable optimize for longer size or smaller size or whatever the optimization was. And so I think looking out for those kinds of things when it comes to base sizes and miniature agnosticism is important. And I think that neatly moves on to another of the rules. And I'm not certain about this. This one's the one that I feels the most contentious, but I feel like having an abstracted line of sight system in your game is essential. And if you provide true line of sight in a miniature agnostic game, you are asking for trouble.
To a degree, I think.
I mean, you're always asking for trouble because you can always convert Warhammer miniatures to be really tall or really small. But yeah. In a game where you're not providing example miniatures, if you're not providing a range of sizes or breadths or heights or sticky outness, like I turned up to my first game of Frostgrave, apocryphally, with a bunch of teeny tiny little goblins, Lord of the Rings hobbits. Absolutely minute models, and then ran around hiding behind walls, suffering the ill effects of not being able to see over the wall because I was a tiny little person and therefore not able to cast spells, but also completely invisible and like impossible to hit. And like, I don't know if you've ever played as Oddjob in GoldenEye on the N64, but it's basically the same thing. And so like, after a few games, maybe with that true line of sight miniature agnostic system, we can decide a social contract that says, okay, we either know about it and we're going to adapt, or, you know, we're going to roughly create this sort of set of house rules around it. But if I turn up to a tournament for a miniature agnostic game that has true line of sight.
Yeah, I think that there is, again, a continuum between like full abstracted line of sight and full true line of sight. And I think an interesting middle point is where does the line of sight come from a miniature, and which direction does it go in from a miniature? And I think that one of the things that's very powerful about miniatures is the information they can offer non-verbally across the tabletop. And I think that if you can say to people, like, have a miniature that has a clear and definitive, like, eyeballs or video camera or a place you know it's seeing from, or a front arc or something of that nature, and then we can communicate where what it can see at the other end is like abstracted. But it's sometimes nice to say that where it's seeing from and the arc it's seeing with might not be abstracted. That might be something you can read from the miniature. And I think that's something where you can go miniatures agnostic and have a bit of somewhere on the path to true line of sight without yet sort of necessarily causing obvious or excessive problems.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of minor issues. One is that there are very dynamic miniatures and there are very flat miniatures, and very flat miniatures are extremely easy to read, and very dynamic miniatures where the model is lunging forward and twisting and its shoulders and it's like head is facing that way, its shoulders are facing that way, but its legs are trapped. Like, you can get very dynamic miniatures where the direction of travel from a human perspective is very obvious, but from a rules writing perspective is quite fiddly to describe. And then you potentially get into a situation where front markers or 180 markers need to start to be modeled or painted onto the bases, and that starts to interact with the how agnostic you are about the base that the model's on. So I think, because it's interesting going back to something like first edition Necromunda and realizing how certain everything was that you knew where the front 90 degrees is. And the front 90 degrees is kind of irritating to measure. Like, it's a difficult thing to eyeball for a human. And also, like, the miniatures are all quite flat, but quite often they're pointing in a specific direction that's like perpendicular to their main sort of flat miniature thing. Some of them are facing forward like an old school kind of hunched orc, and some of them are very much like side on profile things. So I don't know. Yeah, I think that, like, so my rule is don't have true line of sight, have abstracted line of sight. I think that's questionable and you can find your own way. But I think my general point is think hard about your line of sight mechanisms when it relates to the broad variety of miniatures and whether or not you're punishing or rewarding certain kinds of miniatures or certain kinds of modelling. Just purely, not because people are assholes, but because if there is advantage to be gained, some player types, as we've talked about, will look for that advantage and will play into it. And they're not being terrible people. They're just doing their version of hobby.
I will say, you know, yes, you don't have true line of sight, but every game that you've put out has an incredibly controlled sight arc from the miniature.
Mm.
The way that Gaslands Sea is extremely tightly controlled, the way that Billion Sun Ship Sea is extremely tightly controlled, and the way that Hobgoblin Unit Sea is very tightly controlled. So I do think that you've got an abstracted line of sight to what you're seeing to, but you have gone in and gone, okay, you know, this is how you see out from the miniature.
Well, I think that's a separate, that's almost a separate thing of like, when you are writing line of sight mechanisms, just like writing movement mechanisms, like you should probably have something of interest in there, because otherwise there's very little in the way of tactical play.
Yeah,
I think this is one of the things that a certain kind of player gets a little bit tired of 360 line of sight in skirmish games, because it's like, well, you're just leaving some sort of tactical juice on the table there.
Absolutely, 360 degree line of sight is very hard. It's much harder to make interesting in a design. And like as a designer, it's like, you know, okay, I like the fact that I like round bases as much as anybody, but, you know, the move away from square bases has really made life hard for square bases.
Bring back hex bases, man. They're glorious.
Yeah,
they've got all kinds of lines of fire and arms.
Yeah, they're great for square, you know, angular bases are great for designing games with, because you can just go, okay, there's a 90 degree line of sight, there's a 180 degree line of sight. We have like categories and places, and now we can do fun things. Round bases are such a nightmare of defining a line of sight out of. It's so like, okay, this is how we're going to define where it can see, because I don't want you to have 360 degrees, because it's hard to like create tension with that. Is there anything else that you particularly want to sort of hit on with this conversation?
I think those are my three rules: line of sight, base sizes, and WYSIWYG. I think those are the things that people most often get wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what's on my list. And I think,
with the fourth one probably being the conversation we had last time about accidentally providing too much specificity in your models and not providing lovely loose buckets for your agnostic miniatures to go into.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is very much why we had this conversation after the immediately preceding conversation. So go and watch that one as well. I
hope we put them out in this order, or it's going to be baffling.
Absolutely. Thinking about base sizes, what you can fit onto a base size, what it says about the miniature's agnosticism, what advantages can be gained by pushing your base size rules, and where you want to address contract.
There is a fifth one probably, and this might be a totally separate conversation, but just because I'm trying to
it's
rack my brain.
Like Spanish Inquisition-y now.
It's gotten a little bit, yeah. My notes were incomplete on this subject. Like, there are some game mechanics that I would love to use which are not appropriate for model agnostic things. And there are some like physical game mechanics that may not even be appropriate for miniature games, full stop. But like, were I to provide a set of miniatures that were quite robust and then a sort of physical resolution system, like, I think there's sort of so the cartoony world is like, if all of my resolution systems are throwing rubber balls at miniatures, that might be fine if I provide the miniatures, but it's not going to be fine if it's a, you know, Inc. 28 conversion game with a rubber ball combat resolution system. Double dare you. I think it's also like, that's a very cartoony example, but I bet you there are some much more subtle on the line examples of like, you chose a game mechanic because you were excited about it, but it's inappropriate in a in an agnostic, in a model, in a miniature agnostic game. So I think also being sensitive about where you're excited about a game mechanic, which just would fit in a different setting much better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there is a definite conversation to be had about, like, particularly with the rise in like 75 mil minis because of 3D printing and a world of very miniatures, non-agnostic games, and the disappointment I sometimes have when a company puts out a very, very miniatures, non-agnostic game and then doesn't leverage the miniatures that they're sort of forcing you to play with. But that's another topic for another day. If you are designing a miniatures agnostic game, consider the bases, consider the advantages you get from them, consider how you deal with line of sight, where you are from abstraction to true line of sight, the tensions and interests that generates, and where you're going to approach people on the social contract, what the minimum viable social contract you can ask people to engage with, and the expectations you're going to ask them to bring to the tabletop to smooth the interaction with the other player, in things like WYSIWYG, and line of sight, and general sort of honking great big bases that take up half the tabletop because it turns out that zones out the entirety of the other person's army. But, you know, if you are designing a miniatures agnostic game, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who are watching this video who are probably the vast majority of people who are watching this video. Or listening.
Hello, good luck.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? You know, talk about where on the miniatures agnostic path you are laying yourself down. If you're going more miniatures non-agnostic, talk about maybe how you're pinning those things down, how you're stopping people from gaming the system. If you're going fully agnostic, you know, how are you dealing with base sizes? How are you dealing with people, you know, possibly taking advantage of it? And obviously, stop by the Discord, because my goodness, this is a conversation that goes on in the Discord. And it's something that people are very, very interested in. As independent designers, it's something that we wrestle with almost constantly. If you do go down into the comment section and you look for the link to the Discord, while you're there, there's a like and subscribe button. Just give them a quick tap, just like that. But for now, and from this agnostic conversation, it's going to be a thank you and goodbye from us. So thank you and goodbye.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.